Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. A very good morning to you all. Hope you're well. This is your daily program, National Talk Black, in Yana with the Border and Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across the daily country of ours, welcome back to National Talk Black. Have your say, Yana up strong. I'm going to jump straight in. We've got a beautiful lady, Aaliyah Cameron from Mara Law. Very good morning, Aaliyah. How are you?
Good morning, Trev. I'm really well, thank you.
Great to see you. Thank you very much for coming in. Now, our topic today, refinancing your home mortgage, is it worth it? When we're talking about COVID-19 and what's happening financially and the world turned upside down, people are grasping at their mortgage or complicated in regard to what should I do here? That's the question. So intro to the question, refinancing your home mortgage, is it worth it?
That's it. Look, as you said, many of us may not remember the last time we had a close look at our mortgage or know what we're even paying back or the interest rate is. Look, it is a good thing to review from time to time and really reassess, you know, is it worth sticking with the financial institution I'm with? Mm-hmm. Should I change? Should I do those things? And I suppose we're hesitant to do it, because it's a lot of palaver to even get the loan to begin with and all the documents and giving, you know, all your pay slips, and they want to know the ins and outs of a duck's backside. Mm. But it is worth it, and it can make a huge difference to your money.
It's worth investigating then,
absolutely,
isn't it?
So, look, there are some benefits. As we said, interest rates obviously can alter significantly with some banks. There might be better flexibility that you can obtain. And, you know, over time, it might be that you want to borrow a bit more because you want to do some renovations. All sorts of things can lead you to decide. But as we know with all these sorts of things, there are terms and conditions, you know, with anything. If you want to change, if you want to go to someone new. So there are costs involved. So one of those things is called a discharge fee. And or you know, commonly known as a termination fee.
Mm.
And that's when your current lender may require you to pay some money to get out of that
contract. Could you break in a so-called contract, aren't you?
You are breaking a contract. So say you're borrowing $100,000 for 30 years, you're breaking that contract. So they're like, right, well, that's getting out of it.
Here's the fee.
There is a fee, and it depends on your particular terms and conditions. Sometimes there's a break fee that you have to pay. So if you have a fixed rate home loan, which some people do, even for a period of time, and you want to refinance before the end of that term, you'll have to pay a break fee. Once again, you've got to check your specific contract terms. And then there's this thing called exit fees. And interestingly enough, lenders have actually been banned from charging early exit fees on loans taken out after 1st of July 2011. So there was actually a change in the law around that. And that was, I suppose, one thing that a lot of people were hesitant to change banks because of that exit fee. But now they're not allowed to do it, so it's much easier for you to get out of the contract you're in.
Well, that's virtually locking an individual or couple into that contract in regards to, I don't know, virtually got them by the throat, you know, locked
that's
them
it.
In and can't move. So authorities have come and said, no, get rid of the exit
that's
fee.
That's it. And it was quite unfair because we all know the amount of money you need to borrow to buy your home, biggest thing you'll no doubt ever do.
Biggest investment.
And if you're locking that in for 30 years, which most of us take to pay off,
yes.
Or there is, you know, many of us don't even get the chance to do that. So that's why they looked at it, went, look, this is ridiculous. You need to have that flexibility. And it keeps, I suppose, the market competitive as well.
Sure.
Keeps them on their toes. And that's what we want with the banks. So once again, if you exit, going to someone else, there are fees again. They get you at every turn. But for a lot of people, it's still worth considering the change. So some banks have a application fee to consider, you know, your application.
So this is the new banks you're talking
that's
to
it.
Now?
Yeah. Some people charge a valuation fee. So that's working out, you know, if you've already got a property, what it's worth, whether they'll lend to you. So that might be up to about $600. And then, of course, there's the settlement fee. And that can range. So that's obviously when they register the mortgage over the property, etc. Mm-hmm. And to attend the settlement itself. So there's all those sorts of fees at play. But as I said, it might be worthwhile still, given the huge amounts of money we all pay in repaying our mortgages and the interests associated with it, that it, yeah, it might be worthwhile doing a bit of a switch.
And doing a bit of a switch, it could be better for you in the long run. Like I said, if you do your numbers, do the facts and figures, so to speak, you may be able to pay your loan off in 25 years instead of 30 years.
Exactly.
And that's more money in your pocket regarding the interest.
For sure. So, for example, I recently, after having researched this, I threw down the gauntlet to my particular bank and I'd had a look at, you know, because obviously over a number of years I'd paid more off the home and I thought, let's see about a better interest rate. It was really interesting. So despite all that form filling and whatever else, I've actually decided to go with another bank.
Yes.
So my current bank just, I don't know, they just didn't pull their finger out. They were slack. And so another bank has said, yep, we'll step up, we'll offer you a much better rate. And I made that decision to go, despite these fees, you know what, current bank, you can stick it.
Yeah. Now, with the current bank, probably let's use you as an example. Did you have that conversation with them first?
Absolutely.
You did? And they weren't coming to the party?
Nope. So
and they
I,
weren't budget sort of thing?
Nope.
So you looked elsewhere?
I just went, come on, you guys, yeah. You know, not only have you got my personal
customer.
Money there.
I'm a customer.
You've got my business's money. You've got my client's trust monies sitting with your bank. You know, it's a pretty big thing. You'd think they'd, you know, try a bit harder, and they couldn't compared to another one. And I thought, you know what, I've given you the opportunity. That's just slack customer service. I'm going to switch despite a few bit of a hassle.
So the other bank had their arms open wide, welcome
they said,
you.
Come at me. I'm going to charge, give you much better interest rate. So
okay.
it worked out that it would be better.
Fantastic. Well, do you have any tips for anyone else thinking about refinancing?
Yeah, look, as I said, review what you're currently paying. Do your research about, you know, banks or lenders. As we talked about, contact your current lender and see what they can do. Mm. Some people also use mortgage brokers. I've used them from time to time. You can get independent valuers and also have a chat to, you know, your local real estate agency just to sort of work out what property market values are as well. Obviously, you know, someone doing a valuation for the bank is very different to someone looking at selling your home or real estate agents.
Mortgage brokers, they're an agent that deals with all financial companies, don't they? Finance companies. So they find the best deal, so to speak,
don't they?
They
do, yeah. And they're quite good for, I suppose, people who aren't used to dealing with banks. They get all your paperwork lined up and do the negotiation, which can be quite handy.
Yeah.
But, of course, they get their own benefit out of it.
Of course. Commission there. Whatever, you know.
That's it. But I've found sometimes they're good at negotiating with banks, but sometimes you get to the stage where you can just do it yourself.
Sure.
So, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes, you're fine yourself. So all those things at play. But
I think if you do it yourself, you get educated as well.
You do.
You know what I mean?
I've
and contact deal
educated.
With people. And there you go. That's right. So you're now leaving the law industry. You're now going into real estate, aren't you?
Oh, gosh, no. That's one thing I've learned. No, no. All that's right, it's an absolute skill. And they
good.
Sure.
So where can I get more information about refinancing my home loan?
Yeah, absolutely. So good to contact your bank. And there's plenty of information on the internet. You can have a chat to mortgage brokers, etc. But it's worthwhile considering. And as we've said, the laws have changed a few years ago to make it a little bit easier for people to get a better deal. So it's worth looking at, particularly at this time where we're all really, really watching our finances.
Yeah.
But if you've got any questions about commercial law, you're welcome to give the team a call at Murrawa Law.
Fantastic. And before we go into the layout of Murrawa Law, banks, in the climate we're living in, we're getting COVID-19 and people are struggling financially, what have you, I'm thinking you need to be looking after your clients.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And in your
situation,
they didn't.
Yeah, so a lot of banks have, I suppose, processes you can go through if you're struggling, for example, to repay your home loans or personal loans, all those sort of things. There's processes and they assess it on a case-by-case basis, but often it's just a deferral of what you owe them for a period of time until you get back on your feet.
Yes.
But it's really important, as we always say, have those conversations up front. Better off to have the conversation then than later on when you're really in the red and then people aren't so willing to negotiate.
Yeah, true too. All right. My sister, who's Marawa Law?
Marawa Law is a deadly Indigenous legal practice. We specialise in commercial, government and Indigenous law.
Yes.
You've got any questions, give the team a call on 07 404 1300 88. We're just happy to have a chat. If we can't help you on a particular issue, we'll try and find someone who can.
Lovely, beautiful Marawa Law. Leah Cameron, thank you very much. All the best to you and your deadly team.
My pleasure.
Look, stay safe, and we're still amongst COVID-19, and we just need to abide by the rules, don't we?
We do indeed.
All right, all the best, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Trev.
All right, too deadly. Beautiful yarn, Leah Cameron, Marawa Law, and fantastic. The topic there was about refinancing your home mortgage, and is it worth it? So there's all the information. Do due diligence in regarding the fees and chat to your so-called bank, current bank, and feel as though if you can do a better deal with them, then fantastic. If not, look elsewhere. You are the customer. They say customer's always right. And it's about a dollar in your pocket is better than somebody else's. So do what you need to do to protect the mule in regard to the cash. All right, your mob, have your say. Yarn up strong. National Talk Back, 1-800-422-416. Too deadly.
G'day, your mob. This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbabrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yarn up strong here on National Talk Black. All right, we're going to catch up, have a yarn with Katie. Now, she's one of the Butterflies Talking Helps champion who has lived with experience of anorexia and bulimia. When we're talking about support, well, Talking Helps to support marginalised people with eating disorder and body image issues. And Butterfly was launched. It's a Talking Help campaign. And we've got one of the champions on board with Katie. Katie, very good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Trevor. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, I talk all the time. That's what I do here on radio. So we have some beautiful conversations, and it does help people. So fantastic that you're one of the champions of Butterflies Talking, Talking Helps campaign. So tell us about your life living with anorexia and bulimia, please, sister.
Firstly, I'd love to just, I'm on the land of the Wurundjeri people from the Kulin Nation.
Yes.
I just want to acknowledge that I'm coming from that land today and acknowledge the traditional owners there. And I don't feel like a champion, but I will acknowledge that it takes a real, like, mammoth effort to start talking about this stuff. It took me years, and I can say I wish I started earlier because...
Sure.
Recovery is a beautiful thing, and I think the more you start talking about this, the more you realise almost everyone either knows someone or has had some kind of experience with body image or distorted body image or like food issues. We live in this really toxic world with like terrible standards, gender binaries, and yeah, it's difficult. But for me personally, my experience with eating disorders happened in two separate chapters. So when I was like kind of coming of age, like a young person around 16, it came about as a bit of a coping strategy, I think, an unhealthy one, but coping one nonetheless, around trying to meet people's expectations, wondering if I was on the same path as my peers. I'm a queer woman, so I didn't know that at the time, and that was a really confusing time for me, and I kept all of it a secret. And
so you found with your sexuality being in a same-sex relationship presented a different set of challenges as well when it came to like your eating disorder experiences. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think I got anxiety around the idea of straying from the heteronormative beaten track because I had this desire when I was young to just fit in and I wanted to please people, and steering away from that, I had a lot of anxiety around what does my life look like if I'm not going to get married, have kids, go down that, you know, that beaten track. But I think when you're in a same-sex relationship, for me personally, as a cis woman in a relationship with another woman, I think it can be easier to hide behind like behaviours that women tend to sometimes have around, I need to lose weight, I'll just skip this meal, I'll just lose a few kilos. Women in societal structures often are like taught that we need to be smaller or...
Yeah, well, when you look at the so-called movies and the models of the world and all the A-class actresses and what have you, you think, then you compare yourself, which probably is the wrong thing to do, but everyone to their own is what I think, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So I think in a same-sex relationship, you can often accidentally normalise these types of behaviours too because, like, other women can often relate or understand those pressures. It's like, don't all women hate their bodies? Which, terrible thinking.
And that's the thing. It is thinking, isn't it, Katie? It's how you think and how you perceive, and your thinking can damage your way of life.
Oh, absolutely. I'd say eating disorders are definitely, it's mental ill health. It's a mental illness that just happens to affect you physically. And, like, for me, it started really innocently, like, just, you know, starting to eat a bit healthier or just, like, be more mindful about what I was eating.
Sure.
Starting to do a bit more exercise. And then as, like, you know, the kudos and compliments started rolling in, I wasn't fat to begin with. Or like overweight, but as I started like toning up and losing weight and people noticed, it became an incentive for me to keep going. And then so it was kind of healthy at first, and then after a while, can't really pinpoint when it happened, but I just suddenly realized that I'd lost control, but I wasn't willing to let anyone help me.
So in your life at that time, were you in a relationship, or did you have parents around you, or siblings, or close friends?
I had parents, siblings and close friends at that point, and I just pushed them all away because I thought that I didn't trust people, I thought they just wanted to make me fat.
Gotcha.
I thought, I don't want to tell anyone. Like, this is when I had anorexia. That one's hard to hide. So I did get help for that one. But then, like, a year later, because I didn't deal with the mental issues, they got me to a weight that was acceptable, sent me on my way, and I still had all the bad thinking upstairs.
So, and were you living at the time? Were you, working at the time?
Yeah, I was working. So I finished school and I was working.
So your work colleagues, they would have been looking at you and seeing that you're losing weight or on the thin side of things. Were they talking with you, or were you just ignoring that whoever came to you, talked to you about the so-called problem, you would palm it off? Was that the case?
Yeah, I'd shut it down. Didn't want to acknowledge it, or I'd brush it off, or I'd say, I haven't lost weight, or, I'm fine, or, I'm too busy to take a lunch break today. And for a woman, like, I think people accept that a lot more, like women who skip meals or who are just trying to lose a few kilos. Like, we normalise that in a way that, it's not healthy. But, I think it had negative effects, like the way that I was treating my body.
So when was the turning point?
Turning point was, Trevor, I was tired. I was a few years into my eating disorder, it had become more bulimia. And I was just losing time. Like, bulimia is really easy to hide, and that's the one that I think is like really insidious, because you can get away with having that for years because your body might not be changing too much. You're within a healthy weight range, and it just became, for me, it became a bit of a part of my routine and a way of coping with anxiety. It was like a release. I'd have this like build up tension, and then I'd purge, and then I'd feel like a sense of calm. It's really unhealthy to talk about now, but like but that's how it was.
Sure.
And yeah, and so just picking like one or two people close to me and just choosing to lean on them and open up, and it's like yeah, shared problems, it just immediately feels less insurmountable. And
and did you have a partner at the time?
Yeah, I did.
Was your partner in support, or
yeah,
was there any conversation going on there regarding your health then?
Yeah, I guess it took me longer to open up to my partner, because when you tell someone, it's also, you're really acknowledging when it's your partner and they're that close to you, you're going to have to let go of this disorder now. You're going to have to get help. They're going to... You're not going to get away with things now. They're going to be watching you. They're going to be checking on you. You can't.
Well, they care for you dearly, and if they see you going down a no good hole, they're going to support you. They're going to grab you and work with you.
Yeah, and I guess it's just about trying to lean into that and know that they trust them, not your head.
Yeah, fantastic.
They've got your best interests at heart.
So as per the butterfly campaign, talking helps, and that's how it started your mend, your medicine, so to speak, is talking with people.
Absolutely.
And talking about your situation, yes?
Yep. The more you talk about it, the more you realize other people, you know, it reduces the stigma. I think there's a lot of stigma that still is attached and shame to eating disorders specifically. And as a queer person, it felt like coming out a second time.
Yeah, gotcha.
I don't know if I want to do that. But the more you talk about it, the more you really start to realize that this stuff needs to be talked about, and also that you're not in it alone. It's like, it's wild, and trying to break down this archetype of that it's only like upper middle class white women that get it. No.
Sure, no. Anybody and everybody, yes.
All cultures. Yep.
Exactly. And that's why this conversation is very important. There's people out there who are in the same boat, and you are a champion in regards to, well, the butterfly and the campaign of talking help, and it does help. So to all our mob out there, men and women, if you're feeling that way inclined, then talk to somebody. And I always say that on the other side of fear is freedom. And fear is just false evidence appearing real. And the talking is a powerful medicine. Now, thank you very much for sharing, Katie.
Thank you so much.
All the best to you, my sister. You take care. Stay warm down there in Victoria, and stay safe regarding the COVID-19. And we'll talk soon, my sister. You take care, eh?
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy your day. All right, bye.
Deadly Yarn there with Katie. That's her name. She's one of the Butterflies Talking Helps champions with their butterfly launch, their Talking Helps campaign, and Talking Helps to support marginalised people with eating disorder and body image issues. So have the discussion. Feeling that way inclined, there are, like I said, you maybe one person in the world, but to somebody, you are their world. So think about that. Very important, you mob. Have your say. Yarn up strong. Add to the conversation on National Talk Black. Yarn with the baldy one, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. And we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bummerbrook Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. A talking program, so talking helps. So give me a call and let's have a chat. Let's talk to Deadly.
G'day folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummerbrook Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, two Deadly Mob, yarning up strong here. Going to catch up a yarn there with Deadly Sisters. We've got Candice, Leah, and I believe we have Jasmine on the line. And look, fantastic local Aboriginal artists from Port Augusta. And they painted a reconciliation mural on the pipeline over there. Girls, very good morning. How are you all?
Good Good, thank you.
Thank you.
Fantastic. So we've got Candice, Leah and Jasmine, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Fantastic. Congratulations on the reconciliation mural on the pipeline. Tell the listeners how it all started and how did you get into this situation and painted this deadly painting?
So the mural was done through SA...
Who's this? Is Candice?
No, this is Leah.
Oh, Leah. Sorry, Leah. Yeah, yeah. So what happened, Leah?
So an email was sent out to all the artists around town and, we were all just... to meet up with the SA Power representatives. And, based on that that meeting, we got picked.
Fantastic. So the mural is finished?
Yeah, it's done. We got that done in 4 days.
All right, fantastic. 4 days. And so how can people see it? Is it on the webpage, council webpage, or how do people see it?
Well, it's basically when you're driving in from... Adelaide, you'll be able to see it if you probably go a bit slower.
Did you guys post it social media or do anything like that?
Yeah, so we posted it on our Facebook page, Walla Design.
Walla Design, W-A-L-L-A?
W-U-L-L-A.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. So people can have a look at it there. And it took, how long did it take to paint the mural?
4 days.
4 days. Well, we're talking midnight going right through. In the freezing cold. Shut up. Well, I'm in sunny North Queensland here at the moment, so which way?
We wish we were up there right now. It's too cold here.
Murray sent me a pair of shorts and singlet and have a yarn with you, mob.
Well, we're all rugged up.
Yeah, shut up. Look, fantastic. Congratulations. So, painting over time, finishing the mural. So you are all artists. Do you come from an art group as such, or how do you mob operate?
Our family is basically artists.
Okay.
Yeah, we're just made up of a lot of artists.
Good.
Our grandmother was a well-known artist here in Port Augusta.
And her name?
Was Millie Taylor.
Millie Taylor, beautiful, yes.
Yep. And Walla Designs Walla is our grandfather's name. So
Walla as in W-W-L-L-A, Walla.
Yeah, so he basically connects us as well.
Beautiful. So you name your design under after him, eh?
Yeah, after our grandfather.
Oh,
yep.
Beautiful. So were you all sisters or first cousins or?
Jasmine and I are sisters. And then Candice is our first cousin.
First cousin, beautiful. Too deadly. And look, sisters in business. Speaking of business, Candice, I believe, you are all going to London regarding a fashion parade over there. Is that right?
Yes. So Anna, the lady from the London Pacific Fashion Week, she's the founder and CEO of it. So she spotted us doing the pipeline on social media and then she invited us to... take part in the London Pacific Fashion Week.
Yes.
Where she wants us to put our designs on clothing.
Too deadly.
And use that as a platform for, what we do.
And so off to London. Look, Murray's been working out. I can carry your bags if you want me to, girls. Shut up. That sounds deadly. And
yeah, you can come with us.
There you go. So you were doing your work, the reconciliation mural on the pipeline, and this lady seen the work that you were doing and approached you to go to London.
Yeah.
Isn't that deadly? So when you started the mural, you weren't thinking of London. Do you know what I mean? You weren't thinking of London, were you? You were just doing your job there, sisters. And you've been approached. Yep. So that just shows you to our young ones out there or anybody out there, build it and they will come. Or if you just keep focused with doing what you're doing, do it with passion, doors can open up. And so the London door has opened up. Work hard. Work with your sister and your cousin. You can make it happen. Well, that's too deadly. Yes, sisterhood. Yeah. Now, Candice, you've got your daughter travelling with you as well, and she's going to be modelling your artwork, is that right?
Yeah, so she's going to be in the show as well.
And what's her name?
Her name is Syria.
Syria, and she's not there with you?
No, she's at school at the moment.
Oh, she's at school. So what grade is she?
She's year seven.
Year seven. All right. So don't go wagging school. I don't care how pretty you are. You get to school, then you come London when we finish school.
Yeah.
This is too deadly. It's a beautiful news story there. So, look, fantastic. Congratulations there, girls. Your family must be very proud of you, three sisters.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, too deadly. Good, 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 good. So we're going to check out this this mural online. But when you look at it, it's also a tool, isn't it? It's a vehicle. It's a message stick. You're doing your artwork, but we're talking reconciliation here because we as Australians, black and white, we need to come together, yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
That's beautiful. All right, girls. Well, thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you three. And a big shout out to Soraya. And she keep doing her schoolwork. And you, Mob, will go to London. And watch this space today, WA, Tomorrow the World. Yep.
And also, can we just also add in our cousin, Robert Taylor?
Cousin Robert Taylor, yep.
Yeah.
What's his input?
He's going to come and dance for us.
He's going to come and ed for you.
Yeah.
A cultural dance.
A cultural dance. He's going to perform. Fantastic. Yeah. So that's Robert Taylor.
He's going to open the show for us.
All right, fantastic. So what's Robert to you, Candace?
He's our first cousin as well.
Oh, he's our first cousin as well. All right, fantastic. You see, you're my big note in yourself in Darwin, and hey, which way your mom coming to? I'll shake a leg for you.
Yeah.
That is too deadly. Hey, proud of you girls. Thank you very much for sharing. All the best of you. Take care. Keep doing what you're doing. And travel safe and stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, sisters.
Yep, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Too deadly. Beautiful yarn there. Candace, Leah and Jasmine and their local Aboriginal artist in Port Augusta. And they just finished painting a reconciliation mural on the pipeline over there. And a lady was watching them do the work and was so impressed and invited them to London. Shut up for the London Fashion Week parade over there. And so they're off to London and they're taking cousin there, Robert Talley, is going to join them. And also Candace's daughter, Soraya, and she's going to be modelling the beautiful artwork. So fantastic. That just plants the seed in regarding a vision in regard to your future and what you wish to do. And like I said, just keep plugging away with what you're doing and using your gifts, your talent, and doors will open up for you. They say if you're working hard for somebody and if they're not looking after you, someone in the marketplace will. So that's about having a vision. And look, we belong to that. We're Dreamtime people, you mob. And it's about vision. And when you look at someone like Leonardo da Vinci, I mean, back in the day there, he was drawing pictures of helicopters and submarine. Shut up. And it didn't come to fruition when he was alive. But here we have helicopters and submarines. So, yeah. And then you got someone like Vince Van Gogh, the artist there. He talked about, people asked him, the different media asked him, how did you do such beautiful painting? He said, I dreamed my painting and then I painted my dream. So there it is. Too deadly, mob, have your say. Yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black with the Murray from the Curry. Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. We're live at First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumber Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Too deadly.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I
remember the day. A very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say. We're calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, the Stolen Wages Queensland Settlement Scheme is still happening. The window of opportunity is about to be closed. The deadline is on Friday, the 28th of August. And look, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Anthony Bevan, partner Indigenous Advisory Grant Thornton. Come to join me. A very good morning. How are you, Anthony?
Good morning, Trevor.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, we had a chat about 2-3 weeks ago about this fantastic opportunity in regard to First Nation people, stolen wages here in Queensland. Let's just shed the light with our listeners out there to how it all came about, what's on the table, and the closing of the door, so to speak, the window of opportunity to claim back funding, money that's been stolen wages.
Trevor, as we were talking a few weeks ago, the stolen wages settlement goes back to practices that existed in Queensland from 1937 to about 1975, where the Queensland government managed and controlled the wages and savings of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who lived on reserves, missions, settlements or islands in mm-hmm. Queensland. Those people were required to work and their wages weren't paid to the people. They were retained by the Queensland government.
Retained as in held in trust or...?
Held in trust. Mm-hmm. They were held in trust by the Queensland government. The record keeping during those times wasn't as good as it could have been. So at the end of the stolen wages period in 1975, it was difficult to identify whose money was in that trust account. Then from 2002 to 2018, the Queensland government had a reparation scheme to pay compensation to people affected by the practices.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2016, Mr. Hans Pearson, who worked and lived in Hope Vale and Palm Island, he decided that the amount of compensation that people had received wasn't sufficient.
Mm.
And so he took it upon himself to instruct lawyers to look at what the options were so people could get back more of the money they were entitled to.
And are we talking interest on top of this?
Yes, we're talking interest. Mm. So he commenced proceedings in 2016 in the federal court against the Queensland government, and then in 2019 the Queensland government agreed to settle the litigation and for $190 million. So part of the settlement was that any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people who were affected by these practices from 1937 to 1975 had to register with the lawyers by 21 November last year. So that was the absolute last date for registrations, and they're well and truly closed now. And then on the 17th of January, this year, the federal court appointed myself and Tony Johnson from Grant Thornton as the administrators of the $190 million. And our job is to identify people that are entitled to a payment under the stolen wages settlement. And the way we're doing that, we're checking people's identities, checking their dates of birth, making sure we've got their addresses and bank account details, and we've been doing that since January. So it's been going on for 7 months now, and we're getting very close to the end, because by the 6th of September we need to be in a position to advise people who's entitled to receive a payment and how much that payment will be. So we've just got until the 28th of August, which is next Friday, for people to update their details with us, bank account details, address, and photo ID, so we can confirm their identity.
If they miss that date, they miss the opportunity.
If they miss that date, even though they registered by the 21st of November last year, even if they registered, they won't receive a payment.
So the so-called application is not fulfilled.
That's right. So people last year put in an application, but they didn't provide all of the detail at that time. And so that's what we've been doing over the last 7 months, is going back to people via emails, via letters, via community visits.
So you're reaching out to them, aren't you?
That's right.
Yeah, that's your job.
We've been to all the major Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities in Queensland, with a few exceptions due to sorry business and community obligations. And we've been talking to people and providing that face-to-face assistance. So today we're on Palm Island and in Doomadgee. So we're helping people with the requirements, but at the end of the day, if people want to receive a payment and they registered before the 21st of November last year, we really need their bank account details, their photo ID, and make sure their address is up to date. So the message, as it was a few weeks ago, is 28th of August is the absolute final date. So we just really encourage everyone out there that did register for stolen wages, make sure their details are up to date with us.
Yes.
And ensure that If they're entitled to a payment, they will receive a payment.
Okay, to all our Deadly listeners, if you just tuned in, Trinity, Trevor and Mike here, National Talk Black. I'm having a Deadly Yarn here with Anthony Bevan, partner Indigenous Advisory with Grant Thornton, the Grant Thornton Stolen Wages team, here talking about the Stolen Wages Settlement Scheme. The closing date is 28th of August, next Friday, and so putting a message out there to all the mob out there who've put in an application, need to fulfil it. They're chasing your bank details so they can put the money in. How many people we're talking, how many applicants we're talking here, Anthony?
Trevor, we're talking about 14,501 people have applied for a payment, and that's in relation to 12,400 people. Now, why the difference is 12,400 people were worked on settlements, reserves, missions and islands and had their wages and savings controlled and retained by the Queensland government. But because this happened up to 90 years ago, a lot of those people have now passed away, and the court has allowed the spouses or the children of people that have passed away to make a claim. And so sometimes a person obviously had more than one children, and so multiple children could register for mum or dad if they had passed away. So all up, we have 14,501 people that registered for a payment before the 21st of November last year. But unfortunately, we still have 4,700 people that registered that haven't provided us with bank account details, address or photo ID.
Sure.
So the message is, even though they've registered, if they don't get those details to us by the 28th of August, they won't receive a payment.
Yes. We're talking stolen wages here. It is actually stolen wages, isn't it? It's money that's the peoples were supposed to get paid, but the government held it in trust. Go figure, why would they do that? It wasn't even like today we got superannuation. Well, that's not stolen. It's money put aside for you. So when you retire, this money was put aside. But did the workers, did they know that?
It's hard for people these days to imagine that something like this could happen, Trevor.
Exactly.
And at the time the legislation was passed, it was stated that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people couldn't look after their own money, and so the government decided that they would look after people's money, and they put it into a trust account. And if you or I lived or worked on a mission reserve or a settlement or an island in those days, we were required under the legislation to work. We had to work.
Sure.
And you could only not work if you had an exemption under the legislation from the administrator.
So people were partly paid from doing the job.
Yes,
and the rest of the money was put in the trust, so to speak.
Trevor, some people weren't paid
at
all, because the way the legislation was set up is that if you were working and during this period and your wages and savings were controlled in this trust account, and you wanted to buy something, if you wanted to buy a car or you wanted to buy something for your children, you had to go and approach the administrator
and apply for your rest of your wages, so to speak.
It was called pocket money. So you had to apply for pocket money. And one of the, we hear so many stories, but Mr. Hans Pearson, who was the person that instigated all this and has done the hard work on
big
behalf
big shout-out to the brother, yep.
Yeah, to so many thousands of people.
Exactly.
He always says he was a person that he never smoked, he never drank, he never gambled, so he didn't require a lot of money. And then so when he approached the administrator for his wages, the administrator said, well, you don't smoke, drink or gamble, why do you need money? So this is what was so offensive to a lot of people, is that this is their money, they worked
whatever hard. They do with it.
They worked hard, and if he wanted his money to buy something for his kids and... his passion was horses, so, he wanted to buy
horses.
Yes.
Which is probably a good investment back in the day.
Good investment, cattle on his property, do something to fix up his house. That was his money.
Yeah, but don't question me what I'm going to do with my money.
That's right.
And, how dare you?
And a lot of people just can't believe that this was happening in Queensland up until 1975.
Yes.
And the fact that money was held in trust and it sat there for many years and nothing was done until 2002. And so what we're trying to do is give people back their money, and this isn't compensation.
No, it's their money.
It's their money. It's just, as you said, it's like superannuation.
Mm.
It's in an account, and you control that, and you decide where it gets invested. Exactly. And what happens when you retire.
Exactly.
So Mr. Pearson and others took this action to say, well, this is our money. We're not after compensation. This is just getting our own money back.
Exactly.
And as you said, with interest on top.
With interest on top, of course. Anthony, how do you divvy up the monies in regard to each individual for people who work 10 years? Some people work 5 years. Some people work 12 hours a day. Some people work 3 hours a day. How do you divvy that up?
And that's a really good question.
Because there's no record of the money, so to speak. So there's no record of the hours.
No, so Mr. Pearson, when he commenced this litigation, he engaged lawyers, and the lawyers engaged historians. They engaged a large accounting firm to go through all the records and try and work out how much each person was entitled to. But because of the lack of records, and, you know, in some cases that was deliberate. Mm-hmm. Some yep. cases it was just poor record keeping. So in a lot of cases, not all cases, but a lot of cases, there just weren't any records to sure. say where mum or dad worked, mm. how long they worked for, whether they worked 12 hours or 3 hours a day. So what the court said is we could spend millions and millions of dollars trying to work out exactly how much Trevor Timms' dad was entitled to.
Sure.
Or we could just say we're not going to spend that amount of money. We're just going to make an estimate.
Mm.
So if you lived in Cloncurry and your dad was taken away to a mission or a reserve, say onto Mornington
Island. There's a dad when he was taken away. So he was taken away to work.
To work.
So from that time of being away would be hours worked.
So there's an estimation. Okay. So we don't look at how long dad worked for, what sort of work he did. The court just said he lived on a reserve or a mission or an island or a settlement in this period of time. And so people who are in that same group mm. would roughly have the same
amount of money.
Amount of money.
Irrespective of what job they were doing.
Yeah.
So whether you were a cleaner or whether you were a ringer.
Stockman,
whatever, yeah, exactly.
Work for the council. So there's 16 different categories that the court has determined, and that's based on whether you're Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, whether you're male or female.
No difference in regarding education or knowledge background? No.
So on your date of birth.
Yep.
So if your date of birth, the reason why that's important is because if you worked from 1937 to 1972, you would have worked a longer period than someone who was born in 1954. Okay. So date of birth is how we work out mm. roughly how long people would have worked.
And people are working on some of these stations, if not for the government, if not for private enterprise. Is that all in the fray of things as well, for people who work privately?
Yeah, so in a lot of cases, people on reserves and mission settlements and islands did work for private enterprise. So private enterprise stations, road crews, builders would approach the reserves and missions and settlements and say, hey, we need some people to work yep. on this road or to build this house, or we're doing a muster. And so people would be identified to say, okay, you're going to go and work for this private company, and that private company would pay the wages to the Queensland government
yeah.
and would go into the... So this was...
A cool trust. So the money was still there for the workers, but it was still held in trust, whether
That's
it came
right.
from free enterprise, private company, or the government themselves.
Yep. Yeah, so the money all went into the one account,
mm.
But people worked for... did lots and lots of things, private sector for government. But at the end of the day, people couldn't access their own money. And so people, this started in 1937. So someone who worked in 1937 wasn't able to access all of their money mm. potentially up until 2002 when the reparation scheme started. So that's an awful long period of time to be working really hard, you know, in tough conditions in
yes.
those days,
yes.
up in the Cape.
And away from family?
Away from family, long periods of time.
Away from land.
away from land, on probably on someone else's land because exactly. you're on a reserve or a mission.
Exactly.
So it was a really tough set of circumstances, and that's why for a lot of people the money is important. But at the end of the day, what's most important, the stories we hear, is that mum and dad have been recognised for working hard all their lives,
yes.
and that they weren't paid, potentially.
Well, that would go without saying. We know our grandparents were hard workers, you know, and that was before the Act as well, well before the Act. I mean, 60,000 years, hello, and a very strong surviving group of people.
Just jump in there and just, if you know, talk about Mr. Pearson once again.
Yes.
He's an amazing character, and you know, as I said, he worked hard all his life as a ringer on around Hope Vale and Cape York stations on Palm Island, and then he went and lived in Innisfail, worked on sugar industry before finally settling in Townsville. And this man is, you know, very, very, very respected elder.
Yes.
And as I said, he never smoked or drank or gambled his entire life. So,
and that's why the question, why should you have the money? You don't drink, smoke or take...
Yeah, that's right. Why do you need money? But if you or I worked all our life and we didn't smoke, drink or gamble... you would expect that, you know, we would own a house and a car.
Exactly.
And our kids would have gone to a high school.
Jewelry, cattle, property, you know, whatever. And, yeah, exactly.
And you would help your children. But the story Mr. Pearson tells of he and his wife, who worked all their lives and hard, is that, you know, he owns a vehicle. He lives in a housing commission house, and you know, his children have missed out on so many opportunities.
Exactly.
To go away for a footy carnival, to buy brand new boots or to help them with school fees.
Look, and all he's asking is just pay us our money.
Yeah.
What's owed to us.
So, but it's about that recognition
of
as
course.
Well. So
exactly.
Any other person would have set their kids up for life, would have owned a house and a car.
Generational families.
Generation. And that generation of Mr. Pearson's age has missed out on that opportunity.
Of course, exactly.
And that's why he took this action, was about money, but it was also about recognition.
Recognition, of course, the work that he's done, created. Look, a very important conversation. Thank you very much, Anthony, coming to the table. To our daily listeners, Anthony Bevan, Partner Indigenous Advisory, Grant Thornton. We're also talking about the closing deadline for applications, and that's Friday next week, 28th of August. How do people get in touch with you there, Anthony?
It's really important that people come and see us. We've got offices in Brisbane, Yarrabah and Cairns. We've visited, as I said, most of the major Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities in Queensland already.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can give us a call on 1300 591 545, and all of the details of where we are, which communities we're visiting and how to get in touch with us are available on our website, www.stolenwages.com.au. Easy one to remember.
Easy one, stolenwages.com.au. The phone number again, 1300 591 545. So that's the number. Get in touch with Grant Thornton, the Stolen Wages team, and chase up the money that's owed to you and your family. A very important conversation. Thank you very much, and hopefully we'll have another yarn probably next week, and paint the picture again, and just to let the people know that the door is closing.